Got a loose cannon here. Around a bunch of money, and the other party is out his product.
Yes, sir.
This account will give up $1,200 in any 24-hour period. That's up from $1,000. If your expenses run higher, I hope you'll trust us for it.
Okay.
Just how well do you know Shiger?
What do you want to know?
I just want to know your opinion of him in general. Just how dangerous is he?
Compared to what? The bubonic plague? He's bad enough you called me. Yeah, he's a psychopathic killer, but so what? There's plenty of them around.
Killed three men in Del Rio Motel yesterday and two others in that colossal goat fuck out in the desert.
We can stop that.
Seem pretty sure of yourself. You've led something of a charmed life, haven't you, Mr. Wells?
In all honesty, I can't say the charm has had a whole lot to do with it.
And this is Douglas. And the silence you hear right now, or right then, was not Damien. Just saying.
It wasn't Damien?
No, it wasn't. Unfortunately.
Anyways, it's been a while since we've recorded. I'm sure Damien is going to use that as his excuse. He forgot. Fuck you, Damien.
I forget that we do podcasts anymore.
He's like, no one listens anyway. I'm like, you're probably right.
I think Soccer Jersey might have a thing or two to say about that.
That's very true. anyways, do you want to talk about Tales from the Working World? You've been tweeting Tales from the Working World.
Yeah.
World. Would you like to discuss it here?
I'll discuss whatever.
Then go. What's this Tales from the Working World going on?
No, Tales from the Working World is just... It is essentially... I try to be a little bit vague, but they are comments on the things that have been happening to me at my office, which has been a fun little situation, especially in the last couple of weeks since I resigned, since I quit. It hasn't gone into effect yet, but
you've given notice.
I've given notice. Technically, notice ends tomorrow, but I have, because I was a little bit shitty. I sent my resignation via email the day I left Jamaica
on vacation
and gave 2 weeks from then. 1 week, of course, I was away, right? And the next week, to my surprise a little bit, because I'd totally forgotten, and some pleasure, my boss was not here. My boss just got back today to the island. But yeah, so somewhere between tomorrow and 2 weeks from now, I will not be working there anymore. And essentially, Tales from the Working World has been, I guess, a documentation, a vague documentation of things that have been happening and my frustrations. essentially, that's what it is.
Alright, you're sounding like you really don't want to go into it too deep, because I know how you're feeling about your leaving the job and how you want to leave it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to leave it there. So I'm just putting this so that Damien can hear this, so he can be like, yes, I still have a bum to make fun of.
I mean, I won't be that much of a bum. I'll still be teaching. I will be making websites, hopefully. I will be applying for new jobs.
So anyone out there who needs a lackey, we have one right here. Email into the podcast. He will work for almost nothing. Won't you?
Yeah, yeah, essentially. I like peanuts, but peanut butter is fine.
Anyways, what will we watch this week? We've been gone 2 weeks. Douglas, I know you have a lot of stuff you want to talk about. Douglas, what have you been watching?
I've watched a lot of stuff, actually. Funnily enough, if I had come back last week, which I had planned to do and done the podcast, I still would have had a whole lot to talk about, because I don't know, I guess with vacation and what's not, I watched a lot of stuff, so I'm gonna really talk about the more notable ones, both the good and the bad. Yeah, exactly, very long list. Andrew is surprised at my list. Anyway, I saw a show.
I'm not surprised, I'm just wondering why you have a long list. I'm like, the list doesn't need to be that long. You can trim it. Let me look.
Well, I'm going to trim it in talking about it.
Yeah, you fucking don't need to talk about My Generation. Oh, that's shut already up. Cancelled.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm so sad, I kind of like that show. Okay, so I watched a show called Outlaw. And this show stars Jimmy Smits, the man from The Blue, the man from L.A. Law, you know. He is kind of crappy in this show, as is everybody else. But I said to myself, you know what? I must watch the man who says, "Coño," all the time in Dexter. And so I gave the first episode a chance, and as expected, it was awful. But the reason why I think this show is notable is because for the first, say, 10 minutes of this episode, this show is Iron Man. You've got... But it is. It really is. I mean, you could draw parallels between his opening scene where Jimmy Smits, who is actually a Supreme Court judge, steps down in a very public manner with the way that Robert Downey announced that he was Iron Man. But there is no argument that the scene with Jimmy Smits and the reporter is not the same scene with Robert Downey and Miss Berkeley / Miss Brown, that reporter there. He's coming from a casino.
What's his show again?
Outlaw.
Outlaw.
Yeah. Jimmy Smits is coming from a casino. A reporter stops him and talks about, you know, how he's horrible he is and how his father was a better man and didn't necessarily agree with what he had to say. And then he says, "Well, you know, you might be right, but we could talk about this later in my room or whatever."
My bed.
Exactly. You know, and guess what happens? There we go. Okay. It's actually almost line for line the same conversation and the same thing. And I thought that was really funny.
But what about the rest of the show?
The rest of the show is horrible.
Okay,
horrible.
I want to make sure you got that note on record.
Okay. Another horrible show that I watched, and I couldn't even actually finish the first episode, was Outsourced. What the hell is wrong with you people? This show is so bad. It's...
I like to break there. I like to stop you by maybe putting a slightly different viewpoint. I don't think it's bad. I think it's racist.
You see, the thing about this show,
racism, a lot of people aren't even looking at the comedy in it. I kind of feel that somebody who wrote the script for this comedy and the idea sat down and he had the best of intentions. He just didn't know what he was really doing. He's someone who lives in a bubble.
I agree with you. But this show, like, I'm okay with shows or movies or whatever about racist people that are funny.
No, but
sure.
It's not
but it's not
racism.
Even that.
It's
it
just
is
unintentionally
exactly.
Racist.
And you know what? I mean, I tried to get past it, but it was hard. But you know what? Even after I barely got past that racism, the show is less than average anyway. So why am I watching it?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a notable TV show for that. The horrible racism that is involved in that one. Another one that I watched was Hawaii Five-0. I've seen so far the first two episodes, and I'm kind of liking it. I don't know why. I thought it would be horrible. Scott Kahn, yeah, I suppose I really like, you know, you're in Entourage, and this, psh, I have to love you.
Santino.
Santino Jr., thank you very much.
No, he is Santino.
Whatever, dude. Okay, what have I watched? I also watched Royal Pains, which is essentially a knockoff of Burn Notice with doctors. I watched the first three episodes of Lost.
What'd you think?
Well, the funny thing about how I watched it was I watched it on a laptop, mm-hmm. which is fine in and of itself because we were watching it on Hulu, but the laptop speakers were really shitty and we could barely
laptop
hear anything.
Laptop speakers generally are.
Yeah, but we couldn't hear anything, though.
Doesn't it make you realize how much better mine are than regular laptop speakers?
Okay, alright, fine.
That's
fine.
What I've kind of said. I know it's not great speakers, but when laptop speakers grade, it's like up there.
Yeah, but I think it's worth a watch to see what happens, but god damn it,
I have all six seasons, Douglas.
I'll totally borrow those from you, but like I keep wanting to know what that girl did, the criminal.
They tell you
finally. Thank you.
No, Douglas, I'm letting you know, like 90% of all of the I want to know this, they're all answered. It just takes its own time.
More than its own time.
And that's the kind of thing I like about it, because it never feels like they're rushing to answer the questions. They're dealing with the situation, and when they get to an answer, they get to an answer.
You know what, though? I feel like, specifically with that, I mean, and I know this is a really stupid nitpick, but I feel that they were playing it up so much, they were like, you know what? I'm not going to tell you the answer. And you know why? Because I'm a horrible person. And I want you to sit at the edge of your seat. And guess what? That's going to give me
ratings. But you see, the thing is that when I watch that show, as much as people can complain about that, I don't think about that. I kind of view it in the same perspective that you saw something like Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Shit happened. And you were with a group of people who don't know what the fuck happened. They're dealing with what just happened. They're running away. And that's what's happening. They've landed on this island. There are polar bears, a smoke monster.
By the way, that's another thing. I was under the impression. I know I don't watch Lost. I'm out of the loop. Yes, 6 years behind or seven, however many seasons, whatever.
Six.
But I was under the impression that at least the first season or the first half of a season was reasonable in the sense that they were on an island. And island type of shit happened to them.
No.
As opposed to in the first episode, my man takes a gun and kills a polar bear. The first episode. Or was it the second? I can't remember.
And Greg Grunberg gets picked up by the smoke monster.
Oh no, I haven't reached smoke monster yet.
Maybe that's the second episode.
No, I've reached the third episode, but there is no smoke monster.
You see smoke, but you see.
Oh wait, Grunberg. Oh, the pilot. Oh, say the pilot. I don't know names.
Well, he's kind of famous in J.J. Abrams' life.
Oh, okay.
He's one of, like, anything J.J. Abrams.
Was he the guy from Heroes?
Yes.
I thought so. I saw him and I was like, he looks like the one that can hear people.
He was also in Alias. He was in Star Trek. Apparently he was a voice in there, but I haven't spotted him.
I would hope you haven't spotted his voice.
Leave me alone. He was in Mission Impossible for half a scene, MI3.
Oh, yeah?
He was the friend who... The guy who Tom Cruise was talking to at the party in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he, like, anything J.J. Abrams does, Greg Grunberg has an appearance, at least. It's like a Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell kind of deal.
Yeah, all right, that's awesome.
So, yeah, I don't remember if they show you the monster initially, but they definitely say it, I think, at that point. They go like, what the fuck was that? It looked like smoke. I can't tell.
Okay. I actually have talked about a bit more than I wanted to talk about, but there are three things now that I need to talk about. One is the tone I watched, and all I'm going to say is that I'm disappointed, Ben. You brought up my expectations to hear with your first movie, Gone Baby Gone, and even though... Your new movie is still above average. It was not up to that standard that I hold you to after one movie. Okay, I'm crazy. I'm sorry. But I still was upset.
See, I know it didn't hit the bar that he made.
Yeah.
For Gone Baby Gone, but I still kind of see it as a good movie. It's not bad, is the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's not bad. You're quite right.
And the worst problem of it is he decided to make a film in the genre which has so many great ones. And it can be so, it's so easily compared to one which is so much better, Heat. There are so many comparisons with Heat and this movie, The Town. And the fact that Heat is just so much better just makes The Town look worse.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it's a good movie.
It is still a good movie, and I take, I understand that, and I agree with you. Now on to the real humdingers, the wonderful ones,
the ones that he knows I want to start with.
So which one shall I start with first? I watched Catfish.
You can't talk about a movie. You liked it. Move on.
I liked it a lot. It's about Neve and what the hell, I can't remember their names. But it's about this one guy who gets involved with the family through Facebook, because apparently they just like call him one day, or not call him, send him a mail one day with a little girl's painting of a picture that he did, and then he like gets connected to the girl's mother via phone and keeps like getting pictures from them and starts like talking to her daughter on the phone and kind of gets emotionally involved there and all sorts of foolishness. And then I really can't say anything else because this movie is weird, and I don't think there's any way to vaguely describe what happens or how awesome it is other than to say that despite me watching the trailer and thinking that the trailer was horrible, and that, or not the trailer was horrible, the trailer was fine, but that the trailer was for a horrible movie, and that this movie was akin to the Blair Witch Project, I retract all previous statements and put forward that this is a really good movie, and it's really interesting. It keeps you watching the whole way through. And I hope you like it. I did.
I hope I get to see it this year.
I know, yeah. I'm just lucky because it was playing in L.A.
No, I hope it's one of, I know it's one of those movies that isn't going to show on more than 5 screens in the States.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that means that the DVD will hit in December and I'll get to watch it.
Hopefully.
Kind of like Winter's Bone, which I know is coming out soon on DVD.
I don't know that one. But anyway, the last movie that I'm going to talk about is kind of like 127 Hours, I realized today while watching that trailer, but the name of this one is Buried. Starring one Ryan Reynolds, who
Mr. Stephen Tobolowsky.
I was about to get into that and have a nice little
listening to that podcast at Tobolowsky House on while I was at work today.
Yeah.
And during the episode I was listening, apparently Dave Chen, who hosts that one, he mentioned that he had just seen Buried, and he was like, holy shit, sitting in the theater, Stephen Tobolowsky's in my ear. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me, actually, because I didn't know anything about the movie other than it was Ryan Reynolds, he got buried, he's got to find a way out.
He's got a phone.
Exactly, you know, but all of a sudden, there is, like you say, this voice in my ear, and I'm like, that is Needlenose Ned, Ned the Head. You know, but yeah, this movie, Andrew, as far as I'm concerned, this movie is fucking fantastic. I have grown to love Ryan Reynolds, even though he may not be the greatest actor. And actually, I may be underselling him because he's really good in this movie. Of course, I have horribly snobby friends. And when I went to this movie, they were like, okay, this movie was good, but... And then after the but, you could not or would not believe that they actually liked this movie with the amount of things that they were saying. They were like, well, you know, when, for example, Steven does this, you know, he could have done that. And when... Oh, man, it was amazing.
He picked the wrong filter during that scene.
But no, I am happy with almost everything in that movie. There are a couple things that yes, could have been done a little bit better, and it's hard for me to say that without kind of ruining things, so I won't. But just suffice it to say that Ryan Reynolds is the star and the only thing that you see for, is it an hour and a half?
I just checked on IMDb, it says 95 minutes.
95 minutes, an hour and 35. And you never get bored, ever, or I didn't.
Alright, so after this wonderful week of films, right, my question to you is, at this point, right now,
yeah,
what's your favorite film of the year?
Of the year?
Do any of these touch whatever you had before? Like,
I don't think Catfish does. I do believe Buried is inching its way. Buried is
It's toppling Inception. It's, or whatever,
yeah.
It was.
Well.
I
don't know if it'll topple Inception. Inception may be the number one just off the top of my head, but at the same time, I don't have any movies that just stand out immediately. But I'm sure if I were to, you know, go back and like look through a Wikipedia list of what movies actually did come out this year, I'd probably be able to add more movies to that list. But right now, like, I've actually thought about it too. The only movie that immediately, when I think, what are my top movies, is Inception.
Okay.
And Buried now.
In the last few weeks, what I've been watching, I saw one of the greatest romance films.
Oh, did you watch Drillbit Taylor?
No, that one I saw 2 years ago. And I mean, that one was stunning, but this one goes leaps and bounds over Drillbit Taylor.
You know what movie I want to watch? I want to watch Heartbreaker. Actually, dude, that's not a joke. The French one.
I know what you're talking about. That movie looks horrible.
Whatever.
And the movie I'm talking about is Twilight Eclipse.
Ah!
Like, if you ever thought of a film that had the love triangle and did it well, it's Twilight Eclipse. This movie's fantastic. It's got Taylor Lautner without a shirt. It's got pasty white dudes with their shirts.
Wait, whoa. Are you telling me that Edward/Robert/Colin has a shirt on?
Yes, he
does. What happened to slow motion and shirt blowing in the wind and clouds in the sky so he doesn't have to glitter? What happened there?
I don't know. Maybe there was a clause in his contract for the third film. Maybe it'll get struck off for 4 and 5. I don't know.
David Slade was like, fuck you. I like me some wolf.
I have to say though, remember when we were talking about how New Moon upped the game like in presentation,
yeah,
from 1 to 2?
Yeah.
David Slade continued that progression in presentation.
Well, I would hope so, given that this is a man that gave us 30 Days of Night, which I think is
Hard Candy.
No, I understand Hard Candy, but I'm specifically talking about that other movie because it's also a vampire movie, and I think it's one of the best vampire movies I have seen in recent years.
Me, it is one of the good ones, but I don't know if I'd say best for some reason.
I love that movie.
It's low on the list. It's low.
Really?
On the 10. It's
but
low
what would 10, what maybe. Would what would go up in your 10? Just all quick, right. Just quick.
First of all, right off the top of my head, Let the Right One In.
Oh, well, okay. Bit,
like,
all right. Yeah.
Like, it's almost number one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anything contests it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Vampire films. Can I say True Blood?
No, you cannot.
I don't know.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm not talking about ever. Sure, ever, probably he's it's not there. But like recent times.
I just imagine there's something else there. I don't think 30 Days of Night comes that close to Let the Right One In. And I just don't want to have to say it right now because I haven't thought about it.
Yeah,
so Twilight Eclipse is a horrible film.
just to make sure that the sarcasm is not lost on people.
Even though I have to give this movie because it gave me one of my favorite lines of the entire year.
What is that, sir?
There's this scene where Bella is hiding from the vampires who are coming to kill her. She's hiding up in the mountain and it's snowing, it's freezing cold, and she's with Edward, right? And she's in her tent, she's in her like her parka and all sorts of warm clothes, and in her sleeping bag, freezing to death, and in walks Jacob. You can see Edward staring at Bella and going, "I can't help you," because he's dead and cold. And then Jacob walks in, immediately gets in the bag and hugs her up, tries to warm her, and Edward gives him a look, a fuck you look, but a look of, I know it's what needs to happen, right? And Jacob just says, completely straight-faced, come on, man, you know I'm hotter than you. And I just couldn't stop laughing for the rest of the movie. Like, that line just killed me. It's almost as good as another line from a film that I also saw recently, The Other Guys. Aim for the bushes. And I'm not going to just... For those of you who haven't seen the film...
For the bushes. This sounds to me that they're not talking about shrubbery, and they're probably talking about beaver.
I'm not going to clarify. That's all I'm figuring out. For those of you who've seen the film, you know exactly what I'm talking about. For those of you who haven't, I'm not going to ruin that line for you, but aim for the bushes. That is...
I really want to watch that movie for the year.
It's a hilarious film, Douglas.
It looked so bad in the trailers, though. It looked horrible. Like, borderline disgusting. Like,
Adam McKay is now my favorite comedy director. Will Ferrell. Like, I started to think about Will Ferrell and his comedy in movies, and I realized something when I was listening to another podcast, and I think it was Eric B. Snyder talking about Will Ferrell and his love for Will Ferrell, and he always does this in his films, in that he's never afraid to go for a joke, whether it ends up bad or good. But what makes him even better is that even when he hits a joke poorly, he then does it again.
Yeah.
And he does it again, and he does it again until it becomes funny in itself.
Yeah.
Which is what I realized watching this film, and I love it. Eva Mendes, fantastic. And it's kind of hard for someone to imagine Eva Mendes as a wonderful actress, but she's brilliant in this film. Pimps Don't Cry, and that's all you need.
No, I thought it was Gangsters Don't Ask Questions.
Well, Pimps Don't Cry is the new Gangsters Don't Ask Questions. Other films I saw recently, I watched The Experiment, which is the film with Adrian Brody and
Forest Whitaker.
Forest Whitaker, blank time. About the experiment, the social experiment that was done, I think it was in Russia. But they set it in America in this film. And they get, I don't know, 20 people. They make 5 guys guards and 15 people prisoners. And they say that you guys have to play out your roles. And you have, the guards have to meet these rules. Like, you have to make sure that everyone eats every day. They have a half an hour of recreation, blah, blah, blah. And they just let it go. And they say another rule is that anytime the prisoners do something, the guards have to react in what's the word that I'm thinking of?
With force?
Accordingly. Oh, okay. React accordingly. So, you know, it's kind of like if he says a bad word to you, then you can't just break his neck. You have to do something that matches what they did to you. And it's all about proving the fact that when people get the opportunity to be horrible to someone, they generally are horrible people. Even the nicest guy in the world. Which is why they made Forrest Whitaker's character the Jesus guy in the film. And I don't even consider it a spoiler because it's a real thing. On top of the fact that this is kind of obvious, that it goes into dark places. Right? The movie in itself is good, but it kind of feels very easy to tell where it's going, and in that it felt very much like, it's 60 minutes, I can tell we're about to reach that spot, it's 70 minutes, another 20 minutes, I know it's good, but I don't really feel like sitting here anymore. That kind of good, you know what I mean? And I'd recommend it as a rental if you're actually interested in seeing this story on screen. But to tell the truth, you'd be better served reading a Wikipedia page.
Fair enough.
Is there anything else I really want to talk about? You know what I will talk about? I will talk about Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I did write a review for this, but I'm going to talk about this. I got to see his film, and as pissed off as I was at my theater because they showed me a television cropped version, the movie was awesome. it has a lot of problems in the third act, especially, like, oh my goodness, I couldn't, like, if you've read the books and everyone tends to have this quibble with book to film adaptations. Oh my god, they changed the book. Yes, they changed the book because, first of all, Edgar Wright started writing the script when only the first three books were out. Mm-hmm. So up to that point, the film is pretty page for page. I mean, there are a couple of things they cut out and they mention in dialogue rather than showing you, but generally page for page. And once you pass that point, it's slightly changed, but you can see it's obvious that Edgar Wright got a ton of notes from Brian Lee O'Malley, the writer of the books. And he basically pieced together his own plot using all of those notes. Because there was a lot of similarities between 4, 5, and 6, the books, and the movie. But at the same time, the differences are what made it kind of hard to sit through, especially when it comes to the explanation of Ramona's obsession with Gideon. The books, it is kind of a silly response in the books, but the movies make it ridiculously horribly silly, and I kind of hated it for that. And what even irked me more was it felt when the movie came to an end that the movie had already decided that it wanted to end a certain way, but because the final book came out, and I even remember reading Edgar Wright tweeting about the fact that the final book came out, I have to go and do reshoots. He changed the end just because the book ended a certain way. Like, I feel it would have been better to have it end the opposite to the book. I really don't want to say it out loud for people who haven't read the book.
Saying that it ends differently from the book doesn't give away anything. Or saying
no,
that you wanted
like
it
I'm
to.
I'm talking in like a weird cyclical way because I'm not.
Yeah, well, whatever.
And that kind of irked me. But generally, it was a fun movie and it was really, really cool. I love especially things like the Brandon Routh fight. Where he plays Todd Ingram, the third evil ex.
The V-Gun.
And it is hilarious. Even more funny is when his fight is concluded. And you read the books.
I've read all the books, yeah.
The people who play those characters who come in into that fight to end the fight for Scott Pilgrim. Just the fact that they were together and the way they were together for that 2 minutes on screen was just amazing.
Yeah.
It is lovely. I have to buy the Blu-ray. And even funny enough, I remember reading a post on Edgar Wright's blog. Mm-hmm. Edgar Wright's hair, I think that's the URL.com.
Yeah.
And some guy, I don't know where, he designed his own custom Blu-ray case so that when he buys his Blu-ray he can just and it looks like an NES cartridge. It looks like Superman with Scott Pilgrim in 8-bit. I want to buy one. I want to send the guy $10 and have him ship me one and I'll be able to put mine in that. I want one.
You know what I really like about this movie or this whole story, this whole concept of Scott Pilgrim versus the world is I really like its chicken and egg story. I love that Brian Lee O'Malley has actually confirmed that, and he said that even though the movie came after the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the movie started writing at about the third book,
yeah.
And it finished after the last book was released.
Mm-hmm.
They worked closely together, Edgar Wright and the writer. And I love that Edgar Wright took his ideas and took Brian Lee O'Malley's ideas and formed his own version of the movie. And of course, his actors formed their own version of the characters, especially the ones that hadn't shown up yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then those characters and those people actually influenced what happened in the books afterwards. Ryan Lee O'Malley actually says that Jason Schwartzman was his inspiration for...
The Book of Gideon.
For Gideon, yeah.
Because you actually never see him until book 6.
Exactly, you never see him.
I think maybe there's a shadow in book 5, but that's about it.
Yeah, but not even just that. He was like, so... Schwartzman came up to him and he's like, dude, yeah, what should I do for this guy, you know? I know you're the writer and thing. And he's just like, play with it. See what, you know, comes out. And things that Schwartzman did went into the book, apparently.
I'm loving Schwartzman more and more with everything he does.
Oh, yes. Bored to Death is awesome.
Like, I remember when he just started, and the first thing I saw him in was Rushmore, which I really liked. I don't know if he did things before that. And then he got into more Wes Anderson things. And I kind of got a little turned off by him for a little while. Like, he just went a little too quirky for me. but then he brought it all back with Bored to Death.
You're going to say Funny People, aren't you?
Funny People. Right?
That doesn't count. He's only in it for like 2 minutes.
He's in it for at least 20.
That's because it's a long-ass movie. But I like it.
Yeah, but whatever. And just to tie it off, one thing that I've really been watching, I've gone like almost 2 seasons, I've watched The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, lovely, lovely, lovely.
Douglas has been talking about it for a long time. And to make it really clear as to what this show is, it's Frasier for physics nerds. It's really smart people realizing they can't communicate with really stupid people, and they either make fun of it, or you laugh at the smart people for not realizing that gap in the communication. It's hilarious. Even if you don't know the science stuff, it's just fantastically hilarious. And Sheldon, that's a character that I can't wait to see more of.
Bazinga.
Bazinga. I don't think I've seen that before.
Oh, he just says it a lot. It's actually, I guess maybe it starts after you've reached, but that's essentially what he says whenever he makes a joke. Or tries to.
I don't think I've caught that yet.
Yeah, it's soon come, don't worry. And it will come in spades.
And just like him always going, was that sarcasm? I'm just making sure, because yes. Like, I've realized it's kind of hard for me to tell these things. There's even one point where, like, they ask questions. It starts out with sarcasm. With really, is that sarcasm? No, it wasn't. Is that sarcasm? Yes, it was. Is that sarcasm? Because I still am not sure. I just like how they roll those jokes. It's really funny.
Yeah.
And actually, we really shouldn't call this of the week, because we've been gone for a while.
Trailers of the recent past.
Trailers of since last we recorded. The trailer for The King's Speech came out, starring Colin Firth.
Colin Firth!
Yeah, that's
yes, Colin Firth, Jeffrey Rush, Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah. My husband has seen everyone.
Insert them into your mouth. Enunciate.
He hasn't seen me. I can cure your husband, but I need total trust. What was your earliest memory?
I'm not here to discuss personal matters.
Well, why are you here, then?
Because I bloody well stammer!
But do you know any jokes?
Timing isn't my strong suit.
Douglas, what do you think of it?
I thought that this movie looks fairly paint-by-numbers. Because... Well, okay. Here's the thing. The trailer... looked like it tried really, 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 really hard to portray this as a Terry Gilliam movie. Did you not see those camera angles? And how everything looked a little bit ridiculous? Like, oh, you are, your methods are unorthodox. What the hell was that, Andrew? Come on. Yes, it looks like it's trying to pretend like it is, but I think it's not. I think that the movie is just a regular, you know... a usual type movie, an average thing. I think the trailer is a little bit too... it plays up things that make it look a little bit fantastical, a little bit, you know, ridiculous. And I don't believe that it's telling me the truth. And for that reason, I believe, even though I look at this trailer and I say, I'm kind of interested, I believe that this is going to be only an average movie.
Whoa, that's strong. I do think this trailer can be viewed with problems, because when I first saw the trailer like a week or so ago, I thought this movie was going to be amazing. But for some reason, when I watched it tonight with you, I was just watching it and I was like, this trailer's really uneven. Because it begins with this comedic feel. And you're talking about it with Jeffrey Rush, like, my methods are unorthodox, and he does that thing, and he has his wife sit on him, and you kind of laugh at the whole thing. But then when he reaches the end where he has to be giving the speech, you know, it's given this serious tone where you're like, this is real, this is important. And, I mean, the film can turn out fantastic, as I've read a few reviews from TIFF about this film, that it's the front runner for Best Picture this year. But
Colin Firth for the win!
But I mean,
The Human last year?
Last year?
With A Single Man?
No, he did not.
Bastard.
Damn you, Academy! Do your job!
Now that I've actually watched that movie. Keep going, Andrew.
Because you're a lazy.
Neither have I watched A Solitary Man. Not A Solitary. A Serious Man. And no, people will hear us laugh and be like, but that wasn't funny.
Yeah, Douglas, you're like a horrible movie person. By the way, talking about The Serious Man, what do you think of Boardwalk Empire?
I still haven't watched anything other than the first episode, but I didn't really like the first episode. I thought it was... But I don't want to say that that means I don't think the show is good, because I think the show can be good. What I think is that any TV show with that sort of length, an hour and a half, almost. It was like an hour and 15 minutes.
Come on. That huge complaint for Tremaine.
No. I'm not saying that it was too long and whatever, whatever. What I'm saying is that because of how long it was, you feel like you're watching a feature film, but you're not. You're watching the first episode of a television show where they have to introduce characters, they have to introduce scenes, places, they have to put everybody into place and start the mechanisms for all the scenarios that will play out over the 10 or 12 or 16 episode run, or however long it is. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to just have an introduction and stretch that out for an hour and 15 minutes, or an hour and a half, or however long this was. This was an hour and 15 minutes. And so I think that I need to give it some time to see where it goes. But that, I think, was really what made this not as good as I had hoped it was. Because I really, even though, yes, I love Michael Pitt, I love, I love Steve Buscemi, Tommy Gunn is in this movie, and I kind of like Tommy Gunn from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. But like, you know,
Al Capone. Yeah.
So I think it lays a foundation, not an extremely solid foundation, but it lays a foundation for what could be an okay show. But it doesn't quite work yet, and I hope it does after the first episode. This is, I have to say, I've only watched the first episode. I know there have been two more. I've seen the first
two episodes, and like, I want to like it, but I kind of feel a sense of I've seen a lot of this kind of feel, and I'm just not in the mood for it right now. But also, I kind of feel I'm not into Steve Buscemi in that role.
Oh, okay.
I feel like it would be better served with someone else. But whatever, that's my feeling after two eps. Maybe I'll catch on and fall in love towards episode 8 or something.
Yeah. I have one question for you, though.
What's that?
What does that have to do with Colin Firth and his trailer?
Michael Stuhlbarg was in A Serious Man.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Rothstein in Boardwalk Empire. I'm not sure if they bring him in the first episode, but he's definitely in the second.
Okay.
that's how I got to that idea. Anyways, what were we talking about? We were talking
trailers.
King's Speech.
King's Speech.
I think we've said our piece there.
Yep, we have.
Moving on to the next trailer. I found this interesting trailer called Marwan Call.
Meanwhile, back in Marwan Call. The SS took me. They tied me up, then started cutting me. I put a scar down my face because this side was damaged in real life.
Mark Hogenkamp was in a bar, and a group of five individuals beat him senseless and did some pretty bad damage to his brain.
When the teenagers kicked my head to pieces, they wiped all memory of everything. What's the first thing I gotta work on? That's my imagination.
Everything's real. The slide on the 45, the clip even comes out.
Oh, sorry. Everybody has a dream. Everybody wishes they had a double that could do the things that they could never do.
There's always something going on in Marwin Call. I've taken place in many battles. We usually come out on top.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Marwin Call. It's about this. It's a documentary kind of feel. It's about this guy who's created this world, which resides in World War II with his puppets, because he went through a lot of... He got beat the fuck up.
One way to put it.
And he started to have memory issues, and he decided his therapy, he was going to create this world, Marwin Call, where anything he wanted to happen would happen. And then it became this big thing because he started taking photos and people wanted to display his photos, and it's all about him going through all of his trouble. And it's kind of hard to describe because the trailer is kind of vague in that sense as to what aspect it's really going to pay attention to fully. But I'm actually really interested in this one. It looks, if anything else, it looks like something that I'd like to sit down and hear about some more.
Well, I don't know if I really agree with you on something you said. You just said that you weren't quite sure what they were going to play up, what they were going to focus on in the movie. And what? I think that... What?
No, like, generally, it's going to talk about Marwin Call, the thing he's created. But, I mean, I don't know if they're going to pay more attention to the fact of how it's helped him. The idea of what happens after it's starting to commercialize. If it's going to at least play into the making of this movie at all, I don't know.
Well, I actually think that from the trailer, it seems to me that what they're going to try and explore is... his hesitation, his reluctance to
share
it. Yes, because it's his. Like you said, this is something that I made for myself, and because he lost all his memories, and it's almost as if with his pictures of this World War II reenactment, or actually, I'm sure they're not reenactments.
Fiction.
I'm sure it's fictionalized stuff. Is creating memories for himself.
The time machine, Douglas.
Oh, is there? I didn't notice that. I didn't notice that at all. But
he talks about one of his characters has a time machine. That's
but I think they're gonna play up on him not wanting to give that up, because it's almost as if he's now sharing his memories and giving away his memories again. That's what they kept saying. But yeah, I think they're going to focus on all of those things that you were talking about as well. But I think probably, or at least the way this trailer looks, is that the major focus is going to be on him trying to, because he's clearly on the path towards sharing this with public, but I'm sure there's going to be a lot of speed bumps, a lot of times where he backtracks, a lot of times where he says, you know what, I'm not going to do this, and then the next day he goes forward.
I mean, it doesn't hurt the fact that whenever the trailer switches to all of these images of Marwin Call that he's taken, that they just look fantastic.
Yeah, they really do. And the funny thing is, so this trailer actually begins, it doesn't begin in the real world, it begins in Marwin Call, and it begins with us looking at action figures dressed up as World War II heroes and whatever. And I thought that's what this movie was going to be at first. I was like, Andrew, why are you showing me a movie that's like a 60s Saturday morning
Didn't you
thing?
Watch Team America?
I did, and I hated it.
I did too.
Let's not
talk about that anymore.
Exactly. But I'm glad I didn't smack you and tell you to press stop. So I actually think this trailer looks good. It looks like the material behind it is very interesting, and I really do want to watch this movie.
Same here. The last trailer I want to talk about as we go on is True Grit.
Mr. Cogburn?
What do you want, girl?
I'm looking for the man who killed my father. The man's name is Tom Chaney, and I need somebody to go after him.
What's your name?
My name is Maddie Ross.
Are you some kind of law?
I'm a Texas Ranger. I know Chaney. It is at least a two-man job taking him alive.
Marshal Cogburn? Can we depart this afternoon?
We?
I'm going with you.
Congratulations. You've graduated from marauder to wet nurse.
We're being followed.
What do we do, Marshal?
The teaser and the trailer came out since we last recorded for the new Coen Brothers film starring Matt Damon, Josh Brolin, and Jeff Bridges, the remake of the 69 film, which at the time starred John Wayne, Dennis Hopper, and Robert Duvall.
Dennis Hopper?
Yeah, he was in that film.
Wow, Robert Duvall too?
Mm-hmm. Even though they're not the same roles.
Yeah, I forget that John Wayne actually was around recently, and by recently I mean, like, you know,
is he dead?
Of course he is.
I'm just checking.
Yeah, he's
really
dead.
Sure.
He died from a while back, but he's
more
still
than 10?
Way more than 10.
I'm just checking.
I think he died in, yeah, you'd have to check this, but I think he died in like the early 70s, but I'm not sure. This will probably, you will probably have to cut this out so I don't sound horrible.
Let's go to IMDb while we're talking about this. Oh, he died officially 1979 at age 72.
I think he died in the late 70s, but you have to check that out.
I'm just not going to mention it. Yeah, True Grit, Douglas. What did you think about this film, this trailer? Because you are a massive Coen Brothers fan.
Oh, I'm a huge Coen Brothers fan. I am happy to say I've seen almost all of their movies. I am embarrassed to say that I have not watched Miller's Crossing and I have not watched A Serious Man.
And I mean, everyone who's listened to this podcast knows that immediately if Matt Damon's in a movie, you're watching it.
Damn right.
So how do these two things coming together make you feel?
I think I just jizzed in my pants. Cue Justin Timberlake. Yeah, no, this, it was funny the way I watched this trailer, because you forced me to watch the teaser first.
Mm-hmm.
And the teaser was fairly bad.
I actually love the teaser.
I did not like the teaser. The teaser was
it might help that I've actually seen the original.
Yeah, maybe.
So I filled in the gaps, and I was just looking at how the Coen Brothers.
Well, no, I know what the story is about generally, and I could fill in the gaps in the teaser. That wasn't the problem. It was just like, when I watched the teaser, I was like, really? Is that all that's going to happen here? This looks blah. But then the trailer, like, filled up everywhere, and you got these great shots and these great lines and the dude.
Matt Damon wins. I'm sorry. Matt Damon wins. I thought you were going to say your
Actually, yes.
I just can't wait to see the film and find out where
I told you, Andrew, I bet you he waited for months on that set. He was like, when are we doing the scene? When are we doing the scene? When are we doing this scene?
I bet,
and then
that
was finally
even in the script. He was like, the dude has an eye patch. And there's a scene in which I tell him there's a sun in his eyes. I'm totally going to do this. The coins are going to chop my head off at first, but then they're going to laugh. Then they're going to tell me to do it five more times.
Exactly. He was like, okay, finally. It's time. It's time. I did it. That's exactly how he felt. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're like,
I didn't need a trailer, Andrew. I'm watching this movie. Psh, come on.
I really can't wait to see who actually takes up Dennis Hopper's role, because Dennis Hopper only has a small bit in the film, in the original. And you actually see a cut of it in the trailer, but I couldn't catch who it really was. Who plays the Dennis Hopper role. And like, I really loved that bit in the original. I wasn't a huge fan.
Who was Dennis Hopper? The lawyer?
No, he's not a lawyer. He's somebody who they meet along the way.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Uh-huh.
He plays a character called Moon. And
that sounds like Dennis Hopper.
And I'm not a huge fan of the original, but when I heard the Coen brothers were redoing it after seeing things like Fargo and No Country for Old Men, I was totally like, I want to see this. I want to see how they're going to change it. And just the look and the feel of the trailer, I just love it. Especially when you see things like that image of the guy on the horse with the bear thing all over, bear fur all over it.
With the bear head, I love it.
Yeah, with the bear head. It just looks like so real. Like the original, I'm guessing time has ruined that one for me, in that I wasn't born during that era, and I'm sure back then what that movie represented was so spectacular and real for film at that point, but I just couldn't connect with it the way that this trailer is feeling. The vibe this trailer gives off. And I think Jeff Bridges is perfect for this role, because it is basically a
the
meld.
Dude abides.
It's basically a meld of the dude and his character in Crazy Heart, because he's gonna be giving those comedic moments where he's just like, dude, I'm here, yeah. I'm a badass, and there's gonna be those moments where he's just drunk off his ass, and it's gonna be fantastic. And I can't wait to see that final scene. You actually get a cut of it in the trailer where he has the reins in his mouth and he has the two guns shooting in a huge fight shootout. It's I think right now it's my most anticipated film for the rest of the year. And I'm cutting Social Network off my list because I have to see that this weekend. So I'm just whatever.
Oh, you're assuming that you've seen it already.
Yeah,
kind of.
I should have seen it last night, but yeah. Not talking about it. Anyways.
Seemed to whisper to me, "Forget it, Lou. It's not too late if you stop now." But then I'd see that it had to be done.
Well, that doesn't make any sense. Don't. I have to travel.
Baby, you aren't going anywhere. They had it coming. Well, nobody has it coming to them. That's why nobody can see it coming.
So I guess we can move on to talk about the film of the week. Our review, the new Michael Winterbottom film, The Killer Inside Me, starring Casey Affleck, Jessica Alba, and Kate Hudson. It's about a guy where I can't really tell exactly what year. It feels kind of 60s-ish, like before or around.
Yeah, maybe.
Actually, it's long before that, if you think about it, because it's not Mad Men style right now. So that's, I don't know. It's way back in time. If I go to the Wikipedia, the IMDb page, I'm sure it'll tell me. And there's this deputy officer played by Casey Affleck, Lou, who is...
You know what, I just... thought.
What?
The director's name is Winterbottom, right?
Okay.
Casey Affleck likes to slap the bottoms, right?
I was hoping you weren't.
Okay. It's like the bottoms. The bottom and bottom and... Okay, sorry.
So are you saying that Michael used to call Kate, was calling Casey into his trailer during this film and had him slap his bottom?
No, I didn't say that. I said that there was a creepy happenstantial.
Let's move on. There's this sheriff deputy, and he is kind of a psycho killer. He's told to run out this prostitute played by Jessica Alba out of his town, but it turns out he kind of likes her, and they have crazy sex, and they create this plot to get some money from the richest man in town. I can't remember his name right now. He's the guy who basically built the town, Conway. And yeah, it's what really happens then. This is a really awesome film. It makes me want to go back and see more Winterbottom films, because there are a couple in there that I've heard some really good things about, especially like Code 46 and A Mighty Heart, which I hear are really good. Casey Affleck, like, when you saw him in films like Gone Baby Gone and I can't remember the name of the film, Coward Who Killed Robert... Who killed... What's his name?
Yes. The assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. Yeah.
He was in that movie. I loved him. This guy...
You know who else was in that movie that I loved? Terminator, man. Anyway, continue.
Well,
I don't... Garrett Dillahunt. That's his name. Anyway.
I really loved him in this film. And actually, I think this is the first time where I'm noticing how much he looks like Ben Affleck. Like, I've always... I'm sure it's been there all the while, but I just haven't noticed it before. I've just been like, oh, they're so different. He is so calm and kept to himself, while Ben is this big character that everyone loves and the rest of us who watch movies actually hate, because he does bad movies most of the time, until recently. I noticed a lot in the cinema how they look. I mean, I kind of went like, oh, that's kind of cool. I really love this movie. There are so many good points in it. The acting, the directing. I mean, up until the final point where the movie starts to look cheap and they've run out of money, it looks fantastic. The idea of this killer, I mean, you've seen it in films a lot, including the classic Hitchcock film Psycho. but to see... played this well is just brilliant. What I really liked was how much I even like the females in this film, even though they're kind of thrown away left, right, and center. Jessica Alba, as well as Kate Hudson, actresses who don't have many good films on their resume as far as I'm concerned. I really enjoyed them. I mean, there are a couple of Kate Hudson films which I really like, but Jessica Alba, you really have to stretch to find something.
Sin City. And that's about it.
And all she does is she dances.
But that's what she's good for.
Just like in this film, she's a whore, so...
I like looking at her. I just don't like hearing her speak or act or... That's not weird.
You didn't like Fantastic Four?
Oh, I loved watching Fantastic Four. Oh, no, I'm just kidding.
And I mean, there was also even a role which I really loved by Elias Koteas, who we know better as Casey Jones.
Casey Jones!
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He is just being better and better in every film I see him in. I saw him in Zodiac, we saw him in Shutter Island earlier this year.
That we did.
And seeing him in this film is just kind of awesome. And what I really loved even more was towards the end, the little cameo from Bill Pullman.
Oh, yes, yes.
He was great. I don't want to pull the gun too early, but I think this might be my favorite film of the year at this point.
Okay, came out in 2009.
No, it was 2010.
Check it. Pretty sure it was 2009. God damn it. That was a movie that I was saying that could actually go in my top 10, and then I was like, well, that might be 2009.
When was the USA? USA Limited in June 2010. USA, the first playing of it was at the Sundance Film Festival this year, January 2010.
Really?
That was the first time it was screened.
Awesome. Okay, yes. This now comes into my top 10 list. Yes. Maybe.
No, this is definitely high up, like top three without a question, but I might put it at number one right now.
Oh,
like, it,
well,
I definitely feel that between now and the end of the year, there are a lot of films which I expect to beat it.
Well, it's coming along to Oscar season,
yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, there's 127 Hours, True Grit, Buried, you talked about.
Oh, man.
There's so many. There's a Social Network, which I hope to see.
Yeah,
weekend.
Hopefully that
but,
will be
but
good.
Right now, this might be number one for me.
Yeah, right now I think this is high on the list. I'm not sure if it's in my 10, but it's high, very high, and I hope it's in my 10. I really like this movie, as you say. Casey Affleck, I almost said Casey Jones, just out of habit. Casey Affleck does a magnificent job of portraying this repressed, and you kind of learn, not really that repressed, psychopath. I love what he does with his voice. Naturally, he actually doesn't emote or enunciate his words very well or as well as a lot of other people, but he actually exaggerates that in his voice in this movie, and he adds that southern twang as well, and it works so well with the persona that he is playing. This whole, you know, I do all of these crazy things, but that's
so
just whatever.
He did the same thing he did in Ocean's 11.
No. I'm saying that's how he talks generally.
Yeah.
But in this movie, he over-exaggerated it, and it worked so well. That's what I'm saying. Plus, of course, he added the southern accent, and I really like the southern accent. For some reason, I don't know why. Maybe it's because in a lot of movies, people with southern accents are fucking crazy bastards. But when I hear a southern accent in a movie, I think, oh, you're a psycho. I'm gonna like you.
So you're saying that you can't get to the end of The Blind Side?
Probably not.
You're like Sandra Bullock, you got that pillow.
Are you gonna murder him? What are you gonna do? But yes, so that and just that specific detail about this movie, I love everything about this movie. I love oh my goodness, the way that he just walks around, and it's weird. He's been played as this goody two shoes guy in the first, say, half of the movie, but even when he is, and when people talk to him, and when he talks to people, even though on the surface it's all fine, it never actually looks all fine. It never looks like, yes, he is really genuinely interested in what this other person is saying, and he is happy to do all of these things, and he's doing favors for people, and he's being nice, even though he says the right words and he does the right actions and he goes through the motions, it never actually feels like he's a nice person. And I like that attention to detail, or maybe I'm just reading too deep into it, but I like that attention to detail that kind of cues you in to what not only he is capable of, but what he eventually does in this film.
I think that might also be because they kind of throw you into it immediately. In that,
yeah.
it doesn't give you that first 20 minutes of he might just be a really nice fellow, and then boom, you find out he's a psycho. It like immediately in the film, it throws us into him getting ready for his day and then going out to deal with the prostitute. And then we see crazy sex, and we immediately know something's up here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Even from his narration, like, you can tell that he's a little bit off.
Mm-hmm. And I love how they like to allude to things. For example, his brother died a long time ago, and he was actually also convicted for what seems to be, I think, statutory rape. I would assume that's what it was, because they said, oh, it was a 5-year-old girl that identified him. And, you know, but they kind of, the movie kind of, after that, shows you something where you're just kind of like, I wonder if Casey Affleck knew a little bit more than what he was saying when he had this conversation about his brother, or if he was somehow, if he had something to do with, you know, these things that happened, or, you know, and I like that. I really did like that they essentially built the whole setting. Everything, you were submerged in this town and in this story and in the characters, and you never got out until the end of the movie. You were just always there, and that's how you know that it's a good movie, that you never in the middle have a chance to say, oh, what time is it? I think I need to, you know, go and do something. Or even it was all, I'm just here, I'm with this psychopath, I am with this hooker, I am with whoever is on the screen, and that was wonderful to behold. So yes, I really enjoyed this movie. I want to watch it again.
what I kind of loved about this film was the way it dealt with violence. There are a lot of films which are violent, and violent to the point of just being cartoony or for entertainment. But whenever there was a violent scene in this film, it never felt entertaining as such. It felt more just being like, this is who he is. Like, this is finally the moment where we're actually seeing, he's actually divulging the most about himself to us, the audience. And he stopped all the bullshit of gentlemanness or anything. Like, what you saw him doing, the crazy sex scene, that was him being nice, as compared to him finally letting it all out in this violent moment. And even you get a feeling of how well he plans his violence, even towards the end of the film, because at first you think it's kind of silly and coincidental, but when you think a little harder on it and you see how it plays out, you realize that this is someone who spends time thinking about how he's going to fulfill his desires right now, because he's a psycho and he needs he has needs, you know. Kind of like a Dexter issue, even though he doesn't deal with, it's not like Dexter in that Dexter spends the entire time going, you know, it's time for that kill today. I gotta get my fix, go down to the corner store and pick up that hobo who's been shouting at me the last 5 times I walked past. Like, he definitely sits down and he plans out everything to a T. And what I really liked even more was the twist towards the end, because I don't know about you, but I didn't see it coming. I saw a piece of it, but not the whole thing.
I wish I knew exactly what you were talking about, because I'm not certain. I don't feel like there was really a twist at the end, but yeah, you know.
Well, maybe not so much a massive twist, but, you know, something came up that we thought was gone.
Oh, okay, no, I didn't think that was gone at all. I knew that was not gone. Yeah, he made mistakes, and I actually like that was really where the movie went. Even though this movie, it did not shy away from the violence, it did not shy away from the psychopath that this man is, at its heart, the story was, or the plot was pushed forward by essentially, I don't want to say mystery, but it was really all these other guys trying to figure out what happened. Mm-hmm. So it's a mystery in a sense, but it's not really a mystery because we all knew what was going on. Maybe it's not very suspenseful. I don't know what to call it, but it was kind of like a story where you know exactly what happened, but you can't prove it. And really, that's what they were doing. Sense, it's a detective movie.
In the mystery sense, what I really loved was observing the rest of the characters watching.
Exactly, exactly.
For example, like, there's a point where they're interrogating him, mm-hmm. and one of the deputies are in the room, and like they all know he did it, but they can't prove it. They don't know how he did it, and they don't know why he did it, which is the biggest thing. They're wondering. You can tell all they're thinking is, why would you do this? And they can't figure it out, mainly because he is a psychopath and they're regular people, and they do not think on the same wavelengths. And you see certain things, like there's this one point where they're interrogating him and the deputy just pulls out his gun at him, and you get the feeling that the guy is just going to shoot down a dog or something. You know, he's like, I don't care, I know you did it, and I know that what I'm about to do is the right thing. It's one of those interesting things in films where, instead of being the person trying to observe, trying to figure out what's going on, you're watching other people figure it out, which is an interesting thing at times, because sometimes like you figuring it out becomes cliche because most of the stories end the same way, which is why it's cliche. I'm going off circuit now. I'm kind of running out of things to say.
Well, if you have nothing else to say, I have this last thing. This movie was awesome. I liked it a lot. Watch it. Watch it with your kids. They'll love this. They really will.
Please don't watch it with your kids. They're too young for
this
one.
The young impressionable ones especially. like 5-year-old Penny and 4-year-old...
In another 10 years, you'll have a Dexter on your hands living next door to you. And once, just before he plunges in the knife, he's going to say, my daddy made me watch...
No, but it'll be okay. I'll just be like, but I didn't do anything. You don't have any proof. And he'll be like, oh, shit. You're right. I can't kill you.
But you see me.
Oh, Dexter, I love that show.
Hey, look here. This here's James. Now, do me a favor. Just show him around. Tell him the TV rules. Show him the games and stuff, okay?
How much you gonna pay me? How much? I'd be doing your job.
$5,000, my man. That enough?
$5,000?
I'll wire check to your account as usual.
$5,000. $5,000.
$5,000.
I'll give him the deluxe mental hospital tour.
My man.
Kid around. Makes him feel good. Hey, pals. You're the prisoners. No, you're the guards.
Now you got it.
Right. Okay. It's all good fun. Here's some games here, and there's. Get out! He's in my chair. Games. Here's some games. Games I want to get out. See? More games. Games, they vegetize it. See? Yeah. Hey, if you play the games, you're voluntarily taking a tranquilizer. I guess they give you some chemical restraints, huh?
Drugs!
What'd they give you? Thorazine? Haldol? How much? Learn your drugs. Know your dose. It's elementary.
I need to make a telephone call.
A telephone call? That's communication with the outside world. Doctor's discretion. All of these nuts could just make phone calls. They could spread insanity, oozing through telephone cables, oozing to the ears of all these poor, sane people, infecting them. Wackos everywhere, plague of madness.
Come on, let's go.
In fact, very few, Jim. Very few of us here are actually mentally ill. I'm not saying you're not mentally ill. For all I know, you're crazy as a loon.
That can bring us into our discussion topic this week. Tying in with the film we watched, I wanted to talk about our favorite psychos in film.
How many psychos do we get?
I was generally thinking like about three, but go on three. As you feel, you know. I don't have anything written down right now, but the first thing that comes to mind when I'm thinking about psychos on screen, and I'm not even going for the obvious Hitchcock film,
yeah,
I'm leaving that out just because that's painfully obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go, however, for an adaptation of that, American Psycho, with Christian Bale playing... Is it Norman? Oh, no, it's Patrick Bates, right?
I can't remember his name.
I can't remember which is which right now. Basically, the Wall Street version of Psycho. And the violence in that movie... At parts, it's kind of comical and goofy, but it's always so, like, you feel the need to just lean in to more closer to the screen as you're seeing the violence on, and with the music entwined, like, Huey Lewis and the News and Phil Collins all playing and him giving lectures about how this music is and how he feels about the artist and how he sold out or he did better on that album or this album. It's just like, it's a movie that makes everyone have to finally say Christian Bale is an awesome actor. Who'd you have right now?
I've got a lot of names. I've got one I'm sure I'm going to be stealing from you, which is Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs,
whoa,
played by Michael Madsen. No, really?
Because I wasn't thinking about that kind of psycho. He didn't strike me as psychotic. He was just extreme. That's the kind of difference.
You see, the thing is, the way I think of a psycho is a guy that does horrendous things. Or can do horrendous things without feeling guilty about it, without thinking, because he thinks that these things are just normal, because he just doesn't, you know, see why people are, you know, all flustered about it. It's just, I just killed a guy, what's up with that? There's no big deal, you know,
I stretch that even further. Mm-hmm. I think you're right, but I stretch it even further to say that he does these things for a cycle, mm-hmm, without reason, without logical reason. And
okay,
when it comes to Mr. Blonde, he kind of had his reasons for all the things he did.
Yeah.
Like every time he was basically reacting to what was happening. They talk about the robbery. He says the woman touched the alarm. I told her not to do it. She touched it. I killed
but
her.
You see the thing about it is, right? You agree that Casey Affleck was a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
He did all of the things that he did for a reason. The first thing he did, he wanted to get back at somebody. The second thing that he did, he wanted to get rid of somebody that was a problem. So, like, there are always reasons. It just may not be a logical step in our minds.
No, but you see, that's the thing. I'm saying that Blonde is extreme.
Uh-huh.
Not psychotic. While Casey Affleck, he is more than extreme. Yes, there is a reason behind what he's doing, but it's kind of, it's not even that his logic goes further than ours, it's just, I don't know, I see where you're going, but I kind of feel that I'm right here. Another psycho in my head, one of my favorite films, is Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
I figured, you know, this is so hilarious because both of these names came to my head. And I was like, you know what? Those are the obvious ones. I'm not going to use them. Let Andrew take them.
Mr. By the Numbers. I mean, when it got to that final scene where he was going through the maze, the snowed out maze, like, I was kind of sitting down there feeling very afraid. And that's what I guess is the mark of a good psycho.
Yeah, okay. I really like, and this is actually another kind of obvious one, I really like Woody Harrelson. Actually, generally, I think Woody Harrelson is a psycho, but specifically, he was quite the psycho in Natural Born Killers. That was something to behold.
You know who was a bit of a psycho in that film?
Juliette Lewis?
No.
Who?
Tommy Lee Jones.
Ain't like, nobody gonna like, miss
her. I just keep thinking of that scene where they're in the prison and the guy, one of the prisoners does something and he basically takes up a clippers or something and just grabs it by the nose. and I can't remember what he says, but he does it in this huge over-the-top voice that he has, and you just kind of feel like, I ain't fucking with that dude. I don't know why, but I'm totally blanking. I should have written these down.
Yes, you should have. Anyway, I have another psychopath to speak of.
Go ahead.
Michael C. Hall. No, not Dexter. Yes, Ken Castle from Gamer.
Ken Castle?
From Gamer. I fooled you. Not Dexter, the, you know, serial killer. But, I don't know, I thought Castle was amazing. And
yes,
a fair... I think he was a psychopath.
I didn't like that character.
Yeah.
I hated that movie.
Yeah.
One guy that I know I had to mention, I don't know why I forgot this. I recently saw the film and I love it. We spoke about it at length when on the podcast. Frank Booth, the character that Dennis Hopper plays in Blue Velvet.
Oh, okay, all right.
Now, if there ever was a film, baby, wanna fuck. Dennis Hopper is one of these character actors who, whenever he's over the top and psychotic, he is at his best. You saw it watered down in films like Speed. And even his role in Apocalypse Now was kind of a little out there, a little coked out there. But Blue Velvet was him. I've never met the dude, but I feel that the guy went home at night and hit women or something. Oh no, I'm sure he's a nice guy, I'm sorry. But
he's
like
a nice psychopath.
Like he asked first, kinda like this. It's one of those roles. It's one of those movies where everyone has to see that film, because that is one of those best roles ever in film, and actor role pairing perfect.
Okay, so there's one person that I thought I had to mention. I have to. And his name is Benicio Del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
And he played the Doctor. And he played it in this little movie called Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I would think so. This guy was crazy. Did you not remember the last scene where he was asking for pie at a little restaurant? And I'm not sure exactly what happened, but it ended up with him almost slitting the throat of a waitress, played by Ellen Burstyn. And then he got his pie, and I think he left. But yes, that guy was crazy the whole way through.
Alright, since we're taking the psycho thing a little off in my view.
Yeah,
I'm gonna skew my.
I hate that movie.
I'm not gonna talk.
Okay,
about
good.
That.
Okay,
I'm gonna skew my perspective a bit, and I'm gonna nominate. I'm gonna nominate John Goodman from The Big Lebowski.
Really? No, he's just loud, and
he's a crazy motherfucker. He pulls out a pistol at a bowling alley for a guy stepping on the line.
Okay.
He smashes a man's car because he plagiarized.
No, he thought the kid stole his money. but okay, alright, fine, okay. This is a good thing that we're stretching, because I actually have a lot more people that I'd like to mention that I stretched for.
Mm-hmm.
First off, a list could not be complete without Mr. O. Timothy Olyphant.
Where is he psychotic?
In two movies, actually.
In what?
In two movies, actually.
Two movies.
In The Girl Next Door as Kelly, the crazy.
No.
What? Come on!
Yeah, alright. State your case, sir. State your case. I stated John John Goodman's case. You have to state Mr. O's case here.
He drugs the our favorite hero, and you know he shut up. I liked him in that movie.
That's
but what about Go? He was a psychopath thing.
So
he played Todd the drug dealer, who, well, it's a fairly complex story because it's about, I think, four stories all told from four separate points of view. But he sells drugs to Sarah Polley, who then asks what's her face, Katie Holmes, to stay with him because, of course, Sarah Polley didn't actually have the money to give to Todd. And I don't know, all sorts of foolishness. But he's a psychopath because he's awesome. Speaking of T-Dot, there's also Ian McShane as Al Swearengen in Deadwood.
Even though that definitely doesn't count as film, okay.
Fuck you. It's the silver film.
I'm going to break you.
Okay, go ahead.
I've thought of, like, one of my favorites that I can't believe I've forgotten this.
Damn it, that's on my list.
No, this isn't what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Can you calm down?
No, I can't. No. No.
And my nomination goes to one and only Max Caddy from the film Cape Fear, directed by Martin Scorsese.
You know, I still have not watched that movie.
Robert De Niro playing Max Caddy.
I still have not watched that movie.
He's on a roll for vengeance. He has lots of tattoos, a great southern accent, and he goes out. He's just crazy.
I think Downey. Jesus. I just got stuck and I can't remember his name. Robert De Niro. I think De Niro gets it not just for that, but for Taxi as well, Taxi Driver.
Yeah, I didn't want to name that one. That one felt obvious.
I think he also gets it for Mean Streets. Just gets it for any movie that he's in with,
like,
Scorsese.
The funny part is that I remember reading interviews where he's talking about this film. And people were like, you've gone so off the deep end. Like, you did it with Taxi Driver, and you did it with Mean Streets. But this is, like, far. Because, you see, with Taxi Driver, he progressed into a crazy character. He started out normal and progressed. In Mean Streets, I wouldn't call him psychotic. He was a bit odd and a bit extreme. But I wouldn't call him psychotic. Cape Fear, he's definitely a psycho. He never stopped being a psycho. He never stopped being creepy, and you never stopped wanting to have him in the scene all the time. And that's what I really loved about this film. And when he talked about it, people were like, why did you take on this role that people would hate you for, because, you know, people don't like bad guys. He was like, a real actor never turns down a chance to be a true villain. Because those are the roles which are the hardest to play. Because I actually think it's very true. Because when you think about people like the characters like the Joker, which I'm sure we've kind of exempted from our lists right now.
Yeah.
In that, Christian Bale, his character as Batman looks so much better only because the Joker is that crazy. And that's the whole story of superheroes and heroes in films. A hero is only as good as his villain. Because in the end, you have to defeat the villain. And that therefore proves how much better you are. So the villain is the stick that you measure it by. So watching him as Max Caddy, it is just so brilliant, his performance. I love it. You really have to watch this film. And what I really loved about it was how Scorsese shot it like a 70s thriller. This was a 90s film, and it's just so interesting to me when I first saw it.
Yeah, that's one of those movies that I've wanted to watch for a very long time.
It's actually a remake. I haven't seen the original.
Ew, I did not know that. But okay, I have a lot of other people. I have Brad Pitt playing Tyler Durden in Fight Club.
Yeah, he's kind of psycho.
I mean, this guy actually is kind of like, duh, you know, the one of the big ones, Javier Bardem, No Country for Women. Sugar. I also have, and you're, I know you're going to fight me on this one, I have Ellen Page from Hard Candy.
I'll give it.
Okay.
I'll give that. She's kind of out there.
Okay. And this...
Even though you can kind of say that she might not be as bad as all the people on the list because of how it ends. She's kind of the smart psycho who looks psycho, but yeah. She's like, yeah, but I'm not crossing that line.
It's calculated,
line.
Yes. and my last one is Garrett De La Hunt in Burn Notice as Simon.
Silver film. What does USA count as? Is that like plastic?
It's still silver film.
You know who we haven't mentioned, and I just realized looking off stuff.
Chianti and Farfa Beans. That
no,
guy.
No. I'm not thinking good because that's a little too obvious.
Yeah.
But we haven't mentioned that. I don't think is that obvious, but we should have mentioned it. One Mr. Joe Pesci from Goodfellas.
I just kind of think Joe Pesci is a fucking psychopath. I'm sorry. I'm with you. I'm like, with Joe Pesci, I'm essentially, I have the same opinion.
Goodfellas Casino.
As you with fucking, Hopper. Dennis Hopper. Why? My head, I can't even speak right now. It's horrible. But yeah, I mean, that guy is crazy. Even my cousin Vinny, I was kind of afraid of him. Just a little bit.
I think it would have been funnier if you were born a midget. A full-blown midget. Because he's short already. But yes. If he was a full-blown midget, and he had that personality and that action in him, it'd be hilarious. I think I've written my first bad movie right there.
Yes, you have.
Anyways, I think we're pretty much done here.
I believe so, yes.
If there are any psychos we've left off, email in. You can email us. You can email me at andrew.robinson@gmailreviews.com. You can tweet me or you can hit us up on Facebook. It's facebook.com/gmailreviews for the website. Twitter.com/GMan Reviews for me. You can find the podcast on GMan Reviews. Douglas, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at DJR Lost His Name. I would tell you to go to MashBits, but I don't actually do anything there anymore because I'm horrible.
You'll find a lot of time.
I will very soon. So maybe in the next couple of months you'll see something. But yeah, that's about it.